Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Mostly Horror early and ad-free on Amazon Music.
Download the app today.
You're listening to a Morbid Network podcast.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to Mostly Horror Movie Night.
Mostly.
I'm Steve.
And I am Sean.
And this is episode numbered, I forgot already. 65? 66?
It's one of them, man.
We're in the mid-60s with our episodes, which is wild. Also how old my dad is.
We love Dave.
We have a great episode today. We're joined by Tyler Christensen, who is a screenwriter, author, director. He has a movie called House of Purgatory that you can watch, and he also has his debut novel coming out on August 6th called As Dead Things Do. As always, you know, we have a couple of things that we want to talk about. We have a very fun conversation with him, too. It's about an hour long, which is pretty meaty convo. We want to give you guys a little bit of a synopsis of his book, just so we can get you hyped before you guys listen to the interview. So yes. Do you want me to do it, Sean?
Yeah, go for it. Chelsea, can we get some ambiance here, please?
Yeah, Chelsea, please set the mood. All right. The land has been in the family for centuries, divided and passed down over generations. Caleb knew when he agreed to move to his husband's family plot in rural North Carolina that it would come with its headaches. What he never imagined, however, is that their efforts to rebuild a marriage torn apart by infidelity would soon take a back seat to the pale, skeletal thing that haunts the basement. The shadowy figure that moves about in the barn, the hateful blackness just below their feet. It rots, it ruins, it fights to be remembered, as dead things do.
Spooky, scary stuff, guys.
Yes.
Spooky scarums. Oh, absolutely. My God. Yeah.
So, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I'm excited to dive into it, to read it. Talking with Tyler was great. We usually say that at the end, but, you know, the end of our intro is about, what do you think, whatever. But, the conversation with Tyler was great. And the premise sounds interesting. It makes me think it's like Slender Man, Babadook-esque, you know. I'm about it. I love an evil entity.
And it's also, it's one of those things where we, like, whenever we do an interview, we try to take in the media before we do it. Right? If we're interviewing someone for a movie, we try to watch their movie, sort of thing. Like, we'll get a screener or whatever. We weren't able to read As Dead Things Do. We were able to watch House of Purgatory, but you know, it honestly is cool to talk about it first and then get more hyped up for it after talking with Tyler. So I think that's interesting.
Sure.
Before we get into the interview, though, I know there's a number of things that you wanted to talk about. I have one thing I want to talk about. Who wants to talk about first?
Here, you go first with your thing. I got like just a slew of a few different things.
I just want to throw. I just want to talk about yesterday. So yesterday, Sydney and I went to go see Vengeance, which is BJ Novak's directorial debut. The movie itself is fine. It's enjoyable. It's good.
Yeah.
But it's produced by Blumhouse. Like it's one of the producers is Blumhouse. It's not a horror film. It's like a, it's just a murder mystery drama thing, comedy kind of too. But it's produced by Blumhouse. So we are sitting there and trailers start and we get the trailers for Barbarian, Smile, and then the one movie that I think it was called The Devil's Light, about like this, it's like this girl and her mom was possessed and it was like, let me in to her. And she's just like the first ever female priest or whatever to do an, I don't know. Anyways, the title
has, I have no clue what that is.
The title has since changed. Okay. I guess they changed the title to Pray for the Devil. And it's one of those movies that's gotten pushed to like four times. Anyways, it was really weird because we were going to see this movie that's not a horror film and we got three back to back, like jump scare full horror trailers, like Barbarian, Smile, and this other movie, Pray for the Devil, all have like crazy jump scares in them, like specifically for horror audiences. Yeah. And it was just very strange.
Yeah, I do. Well, spook'em scare'ems are in right now, man. That's what the people want.
It was like going to see Top Gun and getting like horror. I don't know. It was just really, it was really weird. But that was it. That was all I wanted to talk about. Interesting. Specifically.
Hell yeah. I mean, fuck. I mean, I'm down. I've seen at least two of those trailers or the teasers. I don't remember the other one.
I'll send you Pray for the Devil because
then maybe I'll remember it.
Yeah, I think you'll know. They've completely changed the marketing. I think because it's gotten pushed so many times, like they just changed the name for it too.
Weird.
I don't know why.
I wonder what happened there. Yeah. That caused all that, but
yeah,
right on. Well, so there's a few things going on horror news wise, that have me kind of excited. First off, we haven't talked about, they announced VHS 99 coming out.
They did.
And VHS 94 was sick.
Cool.
We talk a little bit about not, you know, shitting on anyone's work, in this, you know, later in this episode, and we've obviously talked about it in past episodes. I really enjoy the first VHS, and then it kind of lost me. I saw number two, and I couldn't really get into it, and I didn't see Viral, so I didn't think VHS was a thing that was really for me. But then VHS 94, you know, came out, and honestly, the images of Ratma were enough to get me interested. I gave it
Shout out to Chloe Acuna, friend of the pod.
Whoop whoop. And it just kind of got me re-excited about that franchise. Yeah. They've teamed up with, it's Studio 71, and then they've teamed up with Shudder. And I don't know, something about the 90s too, like I'm down for more in that direction. And also I was reading an article, it was either on Fango or BuzzFeed, and they were talking about just like the tones that are that you're going to be able to play with in 99, you know, the end of the 90s and the beginning of the 2000s, and everyone freaking out about Y2K and just like, yeah, just all this different stuff. So I'm really curious about it, but unfortunately we have to wait until October 20th.
They announced it 2 months before it comes out, or you know what I mean? Like that was really, it's really closer than I thought. I thought they were announcing it for like next year, so I was like, oh
yeah,
cool, it's coming really quick.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree, the VHS franchise, it's an anthology, right? So it's not, you know, not, it has executive producers that are gonna try to keep a creative through line, but even with 94, like there are specific ones that I like, specific ones I don't love, and you know, it just is what it is. It was the same with the original. It's the same with, you know, really any anthology thing.
Yes.
I think that's the cool thing about the VHS series, is that not a lot of people are going to go out of their way to watch horror shorts.
Yeah.
Like true diehard horror fans, I'm sure will. But this is a good way to get these directors, these creatives, you know, to get in front of people's faces. Like, yeah, you're going to watch this hour plus long movie, but you're going to get exposed to six new creatives that you may, you know, people may have not seen Kuso, and they're going to watch something from Flying Lotus, you know, in this. So, yeah, I think it's interesting. And I'm always down to watch an anthology. I think that even with the VHSs that I'm not a big fan of, mm-hmm. I'll at least dig one of them. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like there's at least one that I can be like, oh, I like that one, though, you know?
Exactly.
And that's what matters. So,
to be honest, I really need to go give the first three VHSs another shot. But yeah, we love an anthology. We love a different take. We love all sorts of stuff. The other thing I wanted to talk about, and I kind of told you about it the other day, but you haven't seen the trailer, little teaser trailer thing that came out for the House of Darkness, or it's just called House of Darkness.
No, I saw Fango or Bloody Disgusting posted an article about it with Justin.
Yeah.
So the Justin Long.
Yes,
film,
it's
right?
Yep. It's starring Justin Long and Kate Bosworth, and it's directed
Kim
Basinger?
Basinger.
Yeah, Basinger. Basinger. Peter, I don't know how to say this. Worcestershire. It's directed by Neil I should know it. Labute. Yeah, that guy. And he directed the remake of The Wicker Man. I will say this, because I don't know, I'm in a tough spot. It's one of those movies it's one of those situations where I'm wondering if I should say anything about the premise. I do not believe that this teaser trailer gives away too much, but I do think it gives you enough of a basic premise where you can see where it's going, so I don't know.
Well, you told me what it's based off of. You told me the author it's based off of, so I can assume what it's based off of.
Well, it's kind of all right. I'm just gonna say it. Fuck it. So it's Justin Long seems to end up in a house of darkness with maybe a couple spooky, scary vampire ladies. I don't know. At least something in that direction. The tone seems interesting. It's honestly something I'm really excited about, and I also just kind of want Justin Long to keep making horror movies. I like him in horror movies.
He's in Barbarian as well. I don't know if you know.
Oh, that. Yeah. Yep, you're fucking right. Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, so I'm stoked on that, and I would say that if anyone wanted to watch that first trailer that they put out, it has my stamp of approval on, like, safe enough. Also, if you don't want to and you just want to give it a shot, it also has my stamp of approval of worth a shot without you seeing anything. So
yeah,
pick a stamp.
I don't think I'm going to watch anything.
Right.
It's got stamps on it regardless.
Yeah, it's got stamps. Yeah, it's approved. It's Sean Parker approved.
Got stamps.
Yep. Okay. And I don't know. What else, man? We haven't talked about the Pearl trailer drop at all.
No, I haven't watched it.
I haven't watched it either, but I feel like we should at least acknowledge that it
exists. We're trying
to
not watch it. Yeah, so, I mean, we talked about this when we talked about X, when we saw, you know, Kid Cudi. Which, by the way, did you see the shit that happened at Rolling Loud with Kid Cudi?
No, what happened?
So, Kanye was the headliner at Rolling Loud, and then he dropped out, and they replaced him with Kid Cudi, and people were stoked. And while Kid Cudi was performing, people were throwing things at him, to the point where he walked off. He cut his performance short. Yeah.
Why would it?
Which,
what the fuck?
Yeah, after seeing Kid Cudi in person, like, he just seems like the coolest guy. And nicest dude. And what, unbelievable that would happen.
That is so disrespectful. I just can't imagine. I honestly think that everybody, depending on what they're throwing, I don't know. You shouldn't throw things at people. It doesn't matter if you paid for a ticket. It doesn't matter if they're famous. And I think that, honestly, if they got hit with assault charges, that would be fair.
Yeah,
don't fucking throw things at people. Yeah.
Absolutely. But anyways, when we had our ex thing, we talked about, I believe we talked about how they went to New Zealand and they had to quarantine for a week or something. And the director of X basically was like, I'm just going to write a whole nother movie, a prequel movie, while I'm here. And so he did. And then they just stayed in New Zealand afterwards and made Pearl with Mia Goth, who's reprising her spoiler role. And it looks, I don't know. I mean, it's A24 signed on to do it again. So they obviously feel a type of way about it. Like, you know, I think it's going to be good. I'm excited to watch it. I like that it's going to be a period piece. So
yeah. Yeah, it's I'm definitely curious about it. I do remember us, you know, bringing it up, and I guess I just wanted to say, like, will they finally drop some stuff? And what did you? I'm sorry, did you say the date that we're gonna get it? Did I miss that? Did my brain miss out?
No, I think it. I'm not 100% sure when it comes out. I could tell you in 2 seconds. I don't know if it's September, October, November. I literally just searched the word Pearl as if that's gonna get me anything besides like just images of pearls.
Right.
When does this come out? Comes out September 16th. So fast. Has there ever been a movie followed by a prequel or sequel within that close of release dates? I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Have we ever had something that had that quick of a turnaround?
Probably I don't not. Think so. I guess we'll have to think on it and talk about it next episode.
Yeah,
but either way, I'm stoked on it. I feel like it's going to be weird. It's probably going to be really weird, but probably fun. So, the other thing that I have two other things. So, have you heard about The Lair?
No.
Okay. So The Lair. The Lair is by, the director of The Descent and Dog Soldiers, Neil Marshall. Yep, and it is, I don't know if we have a date or anything, but I'm pretty sure that it's probably going to have like a light theater release, but it looks like it's also involved with Shudder. And it looks really fun. It looks like we're going to get a lot of practical effects. Here's like a quick little breakdown of that. I don't even know if there's a trailer. I just read an article about it, but...
Mm-hmm.
A Royal Air Force pilot who is shot down in Afghanistan and takes refuge in an abandoned bunker, unknowingly releasing beings known as the Ravengers, half-human, half-alien, man-made bioweapons. These images come... that's just more whatever. I'm reading this on Collider.com. So,
interesting.
I saw some of the images of these Ravengers, and it looks fun. It looks like total fun action horror... like the type of shit that we haven't gotten in a minute. That I'm kind of just excited for something like this, like kind of fucking weird.
I mean, Neil Marshall makes, you know, interesting stuff. It says it's going to be in theaters and on digital and VOD on October 28th. And then Shudder's going to be streaming it early next year. So yeah, maybe we can get a glimpse of it. I'm looking at some imagery right now. We should try to see if we can do something, with this. Is interesting.
Sure.
Write it down.
Yeah, it is written down. Okay. And lastly, just because I have Lovecraft on the brain recently, I think probably because of Stranger Things. So Barbara Crampton is going to be starring in a Lovecraft adaptation of a story called The Thing on the Doorstep. And we don't know much about it other than that, but that has me all kinds of excited. I'm always down to go in a Lovecraft direction. I still really want a Del Toro Call of Cthulhu movie. But I'm assuming that you are pulling up the info that I don't have.
Well, yeah. So this is, I remembered that this is being directed by Joe Lynch, who did Mayhem.
Yes. Yep.
And he also did, I think he did Wrong Turn 2. And he's done some other things since then. But yeah. So, I mean, what?
I forgot one more. So sorry. I'm just bombarding everybody.
There's so many things.
This one is funny. There is a movie called The Retaliators that's coming out.
Okay.
And it has members of Five Finger Death Punch, Motley Crue, and Papa Roach in the movie.
Jesus Christ.
Yes. And if that isn't enough to just get you seven shades of hyped up, then I don't know what is. Sorry, I don't know if I'll watch that. Ton. Are you kidding me? I'm gonna be seven Coors Light deep, just tearing my heart open, sewing myself shut. I don't know a Five Finger Death Punch song off the top of my head.
I can't quote them at all. Yeah, no idea.
But it's gonna be good shit, dude. Yeah, it's That's just going to be Scarred, funny. The movie. Sorry, I'm really focused on the Papa Roach aspect. Left me permanently scarred.
Let's I forgot that was show. Even a TV show. We could totally get him. Are you kidding
Let's
me?
Let's do it. Let's
Homie
do it.
Homie from Papa Roach.
Let's go. And we'll just talk about Scarred for a whole episode.
Anyways, like I said before, we have a great interview with Tyler Christensen, the author of As Dead Things Do. We talked about it for a bit, but any last thoughts before we go into the interview, Sean?
No. I think I said everything I wanted to say. Tyler, it was honestly a blast talking with Tyler. You can tell that he loves the genre.
Yeah.
I you know, had a blast watching House of Purgatory. It's definitely like an early film for him. It's an indie flick, but it is a fun indie flick. It's not one that you have to crawl your way through by any means. It's fun. And the book, I'm excited to read the book.
Yeah. So absolutely.
Yeah. I think we had a good time.
All right. On that note, hope everyone enjoys our interview with Tyler Christensen.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, we are joined today by Tyler Christensen. Tyler is an award-winning screenwriter, director, and author whose debut film House of Purgatory premiered in 2016. His debut novel, As Dead Things Do, which is billed as a terrifying page-turner by Hocus Pocus producer David Krishner, comes out on August 6th. Tyler, thanks for being on the pod today.
You bet. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, of course, man. We appreciate you taking the time. It's 9 o'clock where you are, right, on Pacific time?
Yes. Yeah, I've always been early bird though, so it's all good.
That's good. Sean texted me 20 minutes ago saying, "Oh, I just woke up." So
noon. It is noon here in New York, and I am new to consciousness right now. So yeah, not an early bird by any means. But yeah, how you doing today, Tyler? I want to point out right off the bat that I see you have a Pet Sematary shirt on. You have a Good Guys hat on. And I see a Chucky doll in the back, which makes me immediately curious what you thought of the remakes of both of those movies. That's immediately where my head went.
I try very hard to not shit on other people's work.
Absolutely.
So next question, please.
Fair enough. Okay.
They all have their merits.
Yeah, everything. I mean, I think, you know, I don't really remember the child or the Chucky remake. I'm enjoying the TV show.
Nice. I was just going to ask about that.
Yeah. And then as far as the Pet Sematary remake, I mean, they took a swing. Didn't work for me, but
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think that anytime you do that, I mean, I think there's this idea that when you remake something that it somehow affects the original, that, oh, you ruined it for me. It's my Pet Sematary that scared just the absolute shit out of me when I was little is still there. So yeah, exactly. The fact that another one came out and I didn't care for it doesn't mean anything to me. You know, it's still one of my favorite books and still one of my original kind of like horror movie, you know, moments as a little one. So
yeah,
sure.
Can't take that away. So I think when people get so upset and this idea of you're ruining something from my pet, shut up. You're not ruining
it. Yes. Now we have this conversation on this show so much, so many times, because there is this whole, a lot of people hate remakes. But I'm very much of that mindset. I'm always curious to see a new take on something. So you know.
Well, especially when it's like a not just a different adaptation of a novel. It's not even a remake of the movie. It's just a different version. You know, someone else took a novel and has taken a swing at it. You know, the same thing said for, you know, the new It or the, you know, a million different things where it's just like, you know, take the source material and run with it. It doesn't, you know, then we all have our favorite version of it.
Exactly.
Yep. No, 100%. I think you put it perfectly. So you're talking about Pet Sematary as being one of your, like, you know, kind of core memories of horror. That's something that we always ask all of our guests. It's kind of the way that we start these conversations is, you know, can you remember your very first or some of the first horror memories, whether it was, you know, seeing a movie that you shouldn't have or, you know, pulling something off of the shelf and just being really into it. Like, can you kind of walk us through, you know, some of your first horror memories?
Yeah, I think like a lot of children of the 80s, there was a lot of the video store, you know, the boxes, just wandering the different boxes and seeing, you know, I don't think I've ever seen a movie called The Willies, but to this day, I remember that case. And we had a, it was a little like a video rental corner in our grocery store. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like we'd go in there when mom would be grocery shopping and we would just look through all the different things. And I remember that. And I remember the Jason Goes to Hell metallic face. Like those are the two that I remember specifically seeing in that store. So there's a lot of that. And then a lot of, you know, I think as far as movies go, my parents certainly weren't cinephiles by any stretch of the imagination, but they there were certain times when they would say, this is an important movie. You need to watch it. And one of those was The Exorcist. That I was probably, I don't remember. I was young. I was maybe 12 and my mom rented it and said, okay, this is, she kind of knew I was definitely leaning towards that. Just like parents know very early on that their kids are going to be into horror.
Yeah.
She goes, all right, well, if you're going to do it right. You need to see this, but we're going to watch this together. You and I, you have to wait. We're going to watch it tomorrow. It's just going to sit here. And, okay, great. Yeah, no problem. I can't wait. Well, I, of course I couldn't wait till tomorrow. So in the middle of the night, I went down and I was like, whoop, that went right into the VCR. And it scarred me for life. That's just, you know, at that age, the things that scare you aren't even what I think make the movie so great. It's just some of that imagery that you just can't get out of your head now. You're just like, dang.
100%.
So The Exorcist was a huge one. And then I think, you know, movie theater experiences with horror films are so seminal. And I think that you take, you know, as much as, especially now, like we're all watching movies at home and the screens are either giving you, you could have your home set up be as close to theater as possible, but it's not, it's never going to be the same. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget seeing the Blair Witch Project.
Yes.
In theaters. We were 16. So we weren't quite old enough to buy tickets. We had one of my buddy's brothers go buy the tickets. And it was still, it was, it hadn't, I don't remember exactly how it rolled out, but it was kind of like city by city. And it hadn't quite gone completely mainstream yet. And it still was that like, wait, is this real or is this not?
Yes.
We were still kind of like treading that water. So I went into it kind of just like it can't be real, right? It can't, this can't. Okay, maybe. Okay. And you see the movie with that mindset and oh my God, I've never been that scared in my life.
Yep.
Yeah.
It ended. And in the original, I don't know if they've since, I think they added maybe some end credits since then, but it would just cut to black and that was the end of the movie.
There's no credits.
I can't remember. And you're just sitting there like, the fuck just happened?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's one of those things. Well, two things. A, we should start asking people what their, not just their first horror movie experiences were, but their first like horror, because seeing a horror movie in theaters for the first time is also this whole other, there's this extra level of anxiety. You're out of your comfort. Like my first horror movie in theaters was 1408, and I still defend that movie. People are in the air about that one. I love that movie. But I wish so badly that I was like more conscious and into the genre when Blair Witch Project came out. Because it was just this whole event. You know, we got to be here for Paranormal Activity. Which was exciting because that's, for me, that was the same sort of thing. I was obsessed with Ghost as a kid. And when I saw Paranormal Activity, it was one of the scariest things I had ever seen because I thought it was real. I thought it was like a documentary. And yeah, I don't know. There's something about, even Marble Hornets, The YouTube series, I don't know if you know that, but the Slenderman YouTube
series.
Oh,
okay. Yeah.
It sounds ridiculous now, because of what we know about Slenderman, but this was before any of the games or the memes or anything. And with both of those things, they're two of the scariest viewing experiences I've ever had, because I had no clue. I thought it was real, and I had no context, like, for marketing in that way. Like, it blew my mind. So I'm jealous of the Blair Witch, like, getting to kind of be a little bit older, or just a few years older for Blair Witch would have been perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's something too. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. Feel free.
No, it's something we'll never get again. I mean, you'll never, that was a one time only bamboozlement of, you know, everyone.
Yes.
The internet was just coming on, and they were just learning how to market in this new and creative way. Something like that'll never happen again.
Yes.
Sort of 100%. Having that distinct memory of having lived through that was such an awesome experience.
Yeah, I also, because I mean, I specifically saw Blair Witch for the first time on, you know, DVD or Blu-ray or whatever it was, and watching it, you know, hearing about Blair Witch and the effect that it has on people, I watched it and was like, okay, this is fine, but, like, you know, realistically, like, nothing happens in that movie. It's a play on, it's all tension, it's all atmosphere, but then I did have the pleasure of seeing it in a theater, and it is a whole, even if you know it's not real. Things just hit differently in a theater, especially for that movie. Like, the final shot of that movie is terrifying for no reason other than tension and atmosphere. Like, it is building up to this just terrifying image. It's just a dude facing a wall, but it's scary in the context of how you're watching it. So I totally agree. And it's something you just can't replicate. I mean, I'm a huge proponent for watching films in theaters, like, as much as you can. And as safe as you can currently, but yeah, man, Blair Witch is just like its own thing that you can't really replicate in the theater.
And the sound design was so great. The brilliance of it being, I mean, it's funny because now I've actually kind of gotten friendly with Eduardo Sanchez, one of the directors of it. He's maybe working on a project of mine. Every single time I talk to him, it's kind of like, I know we've been, you know, I've known you for a couple of years now, but I got a couple more questions. And I was just curious. I know you've, like, talked about this ad nauseum, but I got a couple more questions.
Right.
And one of the things that I loved, you know, hearing him kind of get more into was the idea of how important and how big of a role, you know, what an impact it had to have in that final scene, Mike down in the basement, and he's the one who had the sound recorder.
Mm-hmm.
So as Heather's looking for him, you're hearing her, you're seeing her visual, but you're hearing her getting closer to him.
Yes.
And that is, like, one of those things that doesn't really click with you at the time, like, why I'm so scared. It's that slow build of, like, you know, like a soundtrack will do with that slow build of a note up, mm-hmm. but we did it with just her voice, hearing her get closer. We know she's getting closer with him. Just getting, I hear it.
Yes. Oh, man. No, that's
chills thinking about
that's
it.
A that's great a point. Great. I need to rewatch this movie. I have it on VHS. It's not one of the ones I have stacked right here, but I think I might try to throw that in later today because this conversation's getting me stoked about it.
I also really quickly want to throw out The Willies that you were talking about is a 1990 Sean Astin movie, and now I want to watch it. I just quickly searched it and just saw the imagery, and now I feel like I need to watch The Willies because
it was like a green, it was like a purple cover, and The Willies was written in green, kind of in wavy letters.
Yep. Yeah. Oh. So is it the same? So I'm looking at a thing. All right. I'm seeing multiple covers for this movie and different posters and things. So the one that you're talking about, it's like a purple cover and you see the trees in the background and there's like a tent and then the Willies and it does like the wiggle. Okay.
Yep.
That would be one of those movies that 100% drew me in a rental store.
Yeah, right. Too. Transition. That's such like a thing that we miss now with movies. That was such a big deal. You know, the VHS cover was like the seminal artwork.
Yeah.
And now the only place you get that is like with books. You know, books are like they're so dependent upon a good cover.
Yes.
Yeah.
That it's crazy. It's like we'll have memories of like that. Like I said, I don't know for a fact. I'm sure I've seen Willy's. I don't remember it at all, but I'll never forget the cover. And I think there's so many books like that
it sounds like we all need to watch The Willies and then come back and do a deep dive.
Exactly.
No, that's when we bring people on and we ask for our intros to horror, one of the main things that people talk about, like the reoccurring thing, and it's one of the ones for me, is walking with your parents in a rental store, accidentally finding yourself in the horror aisle, and just staring at these covers and wondering what the hell is on the tape. And, you know, a lot of the time, the covers were really interesting, and sometimes the movie sucked, or it was completely, it didn't tell you what the movie was actually about in any way, but those covers are amazing. But so you talked about, you mentioned for a moment on your next project movie, you are a filmmaker and you have a movie called The House of Purgatory, which I watched the other night, several Guinnesses deep. And I got to tell you, it was a lot of fun. Like it was a lot of fun. I had a blast watching it actually. And I'm very curious to hear how that movie came about, where the idea started, and just sort of the process of making that movie, if you wanted to walk through it.
Well, I think that, you know, that was years ago. I think we've all certainly grown a lot since then. I think I got very wrapped up in the idea of being able to do that, I think, before I should have, as far as just kind of like storytelling chops and kind of all that jazz. Mm-hmm. But the idea that you got it put together was such a big accomplishment.
Sure,
absolutely.
Yeah, that, I don't know if you guys have this. Are you both in New York?
Yes.
Is that an urban legend in New York that there's a haunted house at Halloween time that is so scary that you get money back for every floor you make it up?
I've never heard of that.
Okay. We've only been here. We're from Michigan. We've only been here for a bit.
From New York.
Yeah. So I haven't
think Michigan
heard
is probably
that.
Even. Okay, I mean Michigan. Mm-hmm. I think figured it here even it'd be more likely here because I grew up in Wisconsin.
Yeah. I've heard of stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah,
I was convinced this was real. Like, I remember in high school, we would actually say, like, oh, it was always like somebody's cousin had been there. And it's, you know, it's down in Milwaukee. I grew up in Green Bay. Like, it was always somewhere like in Milwaukee or outside of Chicago. It was just far enough away that you couldn't drive there.
Yeah.
But everyone had a cousin's friend that had done it.
Yeah.
But I was convinced. So like, oh, no, there's that haunted house in Chicago that you get money back for your store. And it's so scary. Nobody's ever made it to the top. And then one day, I don't remember how, in my random, probably combing through Snopes, because it's just what you do when you're bored, finding out that it was an urban legend and it doesn't exist. And I was floored. I was like, no. Oh, you think urban legends are just, they're so silly that you never, the fact that I'd fallen for one, like hook, line, and sinker, I was convinced this was a real thing. Got me thinking, just like, oh, well, okay, well, what if there was this actual place?
Mm-hmm.
What could possibly be there to scare everybody so bad that, you know, you wouldn't be able to make it through? And, you know, I always tend to lean into the supernatural. It's just kind of my, as much as I love a Jason Voorhees, I would take, you know, anything, Haunting of Hill House over that any day of the week. And I think just that idea of like, okay, well, if it was an individual haunt per person, like as you go in, this house somehow knows your deepest secrets, which I think, you know, now at this point, I feel like we've seen a lot of this type of stuff, but this house is like, knows that everyone that walks in that door has a secret and can exploit it. So I wrote the script and kind of sat back and said, I don't really know. Okay, now what? I had worked for years in reality television. I was like, Extreme Makeover Home Edition, all the way to like Deal or No Deal.
right on.
Yeah, I mean, there was some Finding Bigfoot and Wild West Alaska and Billy the Exterminator. I was some like relatively big shows.
Did you find him?
I personally did not find Bigfoot.
Shit.
But I think there's like, I was on this trajectory that, you know, I came out to Hollywood to be like, oh, like everyone,
yeah.
A dream and a prayer. And you get a job. And right when I came out here, it was like the booming reality television time.
Gotcha.
So that's where all the jobs were. And then, you know, a year goes by, 2, 5, 6. And I realized that I was on this path of like, oh, I'm a reality television producer now. And I'm pitching reality. I'm like, this is not at all what I came out here to do. I don't like this, you know, chasing the paycheck at that point. So I just stood back and I said, if you're here to do this, what are you doing? And decided, you know, I had this script that I wrote, and I go, all right, well, let's not take that next job, which is as a freelancer, you know, the most terrifying thing to say that first time you say no to something because you're convinced the well's going to dry up.
Sure.
And then I actually went back to Wisconsin. My parents still lived at the time and put the money together, just, you know, beg, steal, and borrow, and hired crew out of Chicago and Milwaukee and cast, brought in a couple casts from LA. We had Brian Krause, who was, you know, in Charmed, mm-hmm. as you saw, and Ann Layton. She had done a handful of fairly big things, TV stuff. Yeah, and literally just produced this thing. So many of that, so much of what you see on screen is like my friend's backyard. The whole opening is my parents' house. Nice. Like, my parents' basement became a soundstage, and that, like, look this direction, it's a hospital. Look this direction, it's a creepy basement. Look this direction, it's something else.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, just like the best film school you could ever do.
Yeah.
Is to do it. To do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You were talking about, you know, maybe doing it before you should have, or chops and stuff like that. And I mean, I totally understand, like, that mentality. I feel like we're always going to, like, pick things apart. But I truly was so pleasantly surprised by the movie. There's just so many, like, you know, like, indie flicks and things right off the bat. And I always have fun with them. But it's more like, I don't know, a lot of the time I'll watch an indie movie and I'll be like, okay, like, a big part of why this is fun is because it's so low budget or mm-hmm. you know, like the acting is all over the place, but this was truly fun, and you took it in directions that I wasn't expecting, I think, is like the main thing. How many indie haunted house movies are there with really bad death scenes and things yeah. like that? Like, it has the kind of the paranormal element that you took into it. It was great. It kind of reminded me of things like Grave Encounters or things like that. And yeah, I don't know. I'm glad that you made it when you made it. Like, I think that it,
absolutely.
Like you said, it's you probably learned so much just from doing it. And I think that one of my issues is I'll be the person that overthinks everything that I want to do, every creative endeavor. And I'll think that, oh, well, I'm not there yet. I'm not good enough to do it yet. So I think with a lot of things, you kind of just have to do it. You got to just make it happen. So,
yeah. Hell no, yeah. I agree. I think that the old, like, a good idea today is better than a perfect idea tomorrow.
Exactly. Yeah.
Can you kind of talk, so you know, not to crazy spoil it for people that haven't seen the film, but mm-hmm. you know, you talked about the idea of the film, which is, you know, the haunted house knows your deepest fears and that sort of stuff, and you're dealing with different themes with every character that's going into that. Can you kind of talk about, you know, your approach to especially from a filmmaking standpoint, to handling these different themes in your films and kind of what you're trying to speak about in this film specifically?
I think that, you know, in writing it and just trying to focus on the deepest fear at the time, you know, I'm gay, but I was not out of the closet yet. So that there is a character in that who's, I mean, literally me, that is like, that was my fear that I hadn't even, you know, said out loud to anybody. Right. And then, you know, my growing up, my family was not, I mean, we're not overly religious by any stretches, but you have those friends who are the very religious families. And those are the ones you kind of say, like, oh God, if that girl got pregnant, oh man. So that was kind of an interesting thing for one of the characters. And then, you know, I think as anyone who grew up in the Midwest and lots of bonfires and drinking beer and making bad decisions, there's always that kind of like, dodging of bullets that we've all probably done in our younger days.
Sure.
to the end of that.
Yeah.
And then I just wanted to make it clear with the fourth character that, like, with a name like Purgatory, I think a lot of religious connotations get brought up, sure. obviously.
Yes.
And it would be very easy to make the connection that the house was punishing each of these people for a sin or something mm-hmm. they had done. And to make it clear that that wasn't, you know, the case, I had the fourth character that was, you know, she was the victim of something. She was not being punished. It just goes to show this house knows your deepest, darkest crap, and it's using it against
right.
you.
Right.
Which is interesting. I mean, you never read reviews, but of course you do. And that got lost on some people, and all of a sudden it became like a right-wing, anti-gay, anti-abortion film. And I'm like, okay. Fine.
Yeah, I mean,
you had any idea who I was that you would,
right? That people could twist that. I feel like that's really interesting to hear, because it, especially once you get to the school, the locker scene and stuff. I think it's pretty clear that that's not. I don't know. That's not the direction I would have taken that at all. That's really interesting to hear.
Well, people are stupid, is what I'm
yes.
I don't think I need to. I don't think that's a big shock to anybody.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. No, that's a good through line for anything we'll talk about probably. I am curious. We talked a little bit about the genesis, this urban legend, and actually, so you talking about that brings back, like, as a kid or when I was younger, there was a haunted house in Pontiac? Yeah, Pontiac, Michigan, called Erebus, and it was like yes. The scariest haunted house. It's one where you, I correct me if I'm wrong, Sean, but you like have to sign a waiver so people can like, you touch know, you like touch and, you, like, or yeah. like be that close to you. And that was kind of something where it similar to that. Like, I remember people being like, no one's ever made it all the way through. Like, it's too scary. People turn back all the time. I'm curious if you, do you have other like haunted house films that you're a fan of? Not just specifically like houses that have ghosts, but like haunted house. Does that make sense? Like yeah, pay yeah. to go like, to a haunted house?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say to tie it in. Are you a big fan of going to haunted houses in general?
Yeah, true.
Is that, yeah. Yeah.
Yes, is a short answer. I think the advantage of living here in LA is that we have a handful of them that just have the money to really, I mean, Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Studios is like,
yeah.
I mean, it's incredibly overcrowded and they're, you know, packing people through that, you know, they don't have time to reset the room because it's just a stream of people. But talk about just the amount of money that they could put into these properties and be like, oh, clearly the set design is, I mean, these are professionally designed sets and all yeah. that stuff. So it's really cool. I always find myself just walking around, like wandering, just looking, oh my God, this, sure. That's so cool. I don't get scared very easily or at all. Mm-hmm. And I think very quickly the scare actors see that person who's not going to be, I hate the people that are like cocky about it. That's not me. Yeah. I just don't startle easily.
Yeah.
And I think the scare actors see that, so they leave me alone and be like, oh, when I'm like 6 foot four, the 220 pound 6 foot four guy, they're not like jumping out. Like when you're bigger right. than Jason, it's a little tough.
yeah. It's not going to have any effect.
No. Right. But I love, I mean, yes, I love going through them. And just, I think for the set design stuff, and I just wander and I'm just, oh, that's so cool. And Not Scary Farm does an incredible haunt out here too, that I think I actually like that one more than Universal because it doesn't have the IP that Universal has, but it, mm-hmm. A, it's not as crowded. So they really can take the time in each room and like freak you out. And again, just that set design stuff is just so cool. Yeah.
I want to go to the Universal horror night. What's it called? Universal
Halloween Horror Nights.
Halloween Horror Nights. I want to go to that so bad. I've seen so many like trailers or images and stuff. And I'm like you. Like I would just be. I'd have the biggest smile on my face yeah. just looking at everything. You know, like everyone else is screaming and I'm like, this is sick. Like,
yeah, exactly. That's it. Exactly how I am going through it.
Yes.
Just taking notes.
Exactly. Steven, and as far as movies, I think that yes. I remember it's been a minute, but I remember really liking The House is October Built.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what other haunted house movies there have been.
Have you ever seen
the movie Haunt?
Yeah.
Yes, that was a good one. And that's Haunt? That's the Quiet Place guys, right? Is that theirs?
Is it?
I think it is the producers of it. Yeah.
I didn't know that. That was one I threw on, you know, thinking like, oh, it'll probably just be like, I'm just throwing on a quick whatever. And next thing I know, I'm sucked into it. I was trying to like do work and just throw something on mm-hmm. in the background. And next thing I know, I'm completely in it, pleasantly surprised. I'm curious, have you seen, do you know Sci-Fi's Channel Zero show?
Yes.
Did you see No End House?
I didn't see, let me think now. I'm trying to remember. I definitely saw Pirate Cove. What was the first one?
Candle Cove.
Yeah.
I think I've seen bits of the others. I don't think I ever made it through the whole. I have such a hard time. Like, there's so much content. There's just so many shows. There's so much stuff that unless something is like presented to you on a daily basis to remind you, it's like, hey, yes. remember I got to get back to that.
Yeah.
So otherwise, like 3 months go by, and then you go, "Oh yeah, I never finished that." But where was I? Well, I should probably start over. Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. At that point, I can't recommend enough season 2 of Channel Zero, not just to you, but to any listeners. Mm-hmm. We talked about it a bit before, but it's called No End House. Everything on Channel Zero is based on a creepypasta, And I think that you would find some really interesting parallels between No End House and what you were doing and accomplishing with House of Purgatory. I think you'd be like, hey, yeah.
I do want to say House of Purgatory came out first, but yeah,
no, it did. It absolutely did.
You will see when you watch, like, if you watch No End House, it's because it also takes that premise, that sort of premise, but it mm-hmm. it goes in some place completely off the map by the end of it. But yeah, it definitely is, like, I agree with, I mean, it's my favorite piece of Channel Zero. Favorite season of Channel Zero, for sure.
It's all kind of Dante's Inferno-esque, you know, like everyone facing our personal hells and going through these different levels and trials and stuff. So you know what I mean, like having your own like hell
for sure
created for you.
Well, and the fact that it was based on a creepypasta, it's kind of like they're all of these things are sort of coming from the same place. These are kind of like internet rumors that, you know,
exactly,
probably all a little bit of the same genesis and different ideas that could branch off.
That honestly even ties back into what you're talking about how when you see a film remake, it's not it may not be a remake of the movie. It's a remake of or a readaptation of a book. This is the same sort of thing. Like, these are different people taking the same idea and molding it their own different ways.
Yeah.
I wish we could just force people to see things that way as opposed to, like, you know, remaking movies.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Let's talk a little bit about something original, which is the whole reason you're here, and we talked about it before, but your debut novel comes out, we're recording this on July 30th, so it comes out, I think, a week from today, on August 6th, but it's called As Dead Things Do. Can you talk about, you know, obviously the film that you made it some years ago now, but can you talk about the decision to write a novel, obviously in the horror genre that you're so obviously a fan of, but just talk about, you know, the idea behind it, the reason for wanting to write a novel as opposed to maybe, you know, making another film right now or something along those lines?
I think that, so, you know, it was last summer, you know, we're kind of in the middle of the pandemic and all of us were going incredibly stir crazy. So my husband and I actually picked up and we're like, he went to school in North Carolina in Wilmington and loved it there. And I've been there a couple times. I was like, let's just go to Wilmington. Let's just spend the summer, get like a cheap apartment and take the dogs. His sister lives in a small town called Trinity, which is a little inland, with her husband, and he's got this plot of land that's been passed down from family generations, and they all kind of, it's all been, you know, parceled out, and they're all kind of in the same vicinity, but you know, the original barn is there, and their house is 200 years old, and just all this like really great kind of just history with the place. So we'd go out there once we're in Wilmington, we'd go out there and spend weekends and see them and just hang out. And just, you know, anytime I feel like all of us are in these like old places that our mind, you know, if we see something old, oh, it's got to be haunted, because every old thing has to be haunted, obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
And then when I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh gosh, your place is haunted. And you're like, oh, actually, funny you should say that. Let me tell you a couple stories. And I was like, this is real. Okay. So just hearing the stories from, you know, my sister and brother-in-law, and just being there. You're just around the set. It's this giant, you know, and so not used to having space. Being here in LA, we're all just like on top of one another. And
yeah.
It's always loud. To be able to just go out and sit in their backyard and just stare out at, you know, that used to be a cornfield. Now it's nothing. And there's woods there. And there's this big, like, massive barn in front of you that's falling apart. You just can't help but just be a little bit inspired. And then you're hearing these ghost stories on top of it.
Right.
So I just started writing. I just started being like, okay, there's something here. I can just feel it. I don't know what it is. So, and I think with a lot of times with, you know, creative projects where it's like, I don't know what this is yet, but I just need to get this out down on paper.
Yeah.
And as I started writing it, I just assumed, you know, as a screenwriter, like, this will become a script. Cool. I don't know what it's going to be yet, but I'm going to have my next script. And I it just kept going as, you know, as prose where it's like, oh, this is okay. And this whole kind of internal monologue came out that I realized, like, well, I don't know how to do this as a movie. It's kind of like one person's story of, like, you know, this thing that they're going through completely mentally. So I just kept writing it as a book. And I think that there's something, writing a screenplay is very, I just kind of instinctively know at this page, around this page, something needs to happen. And let's make sure, oh, it's been how many pages since I've scared someone? Okay, I should probably do that. And
yep.
I know that, okay, if I'm getting around page, you know, 70 to 80 and I'm not wrapping things up, I'm going to have a problem. This thing's going to be way too long. Crap. Okay, yep. Now I got to. You just kind of have these, like, little signposts along the way that you just instinctively kind of know where things should go. And with a book, I was like, I didn't know where it was going to go. I didn't know where it was going to end. I didn't know what the scares were going to be, but it didn't matter. You could just write. And I think that was kind of an interesting exercise. It just kind of started that way. It's like, let me just see. Okay, let's just run with this.
Yeah.
And it grew and it grew and it grew. And then I started making these connections. And then you kind of come up, you think of an ending. I go, that's kind of cool. I'm like, oh shit, okay. And next thing you know, you've got like a 75,000 word novel. Yeah. And it was all written in a notebook at that time.
Wow.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. Okay. Which is not normally my style. I'm not like one of those like people who are like, I need to write in my spiral notebooks. This just happened to me. It's funny how, like, when it'd be sitting in their backyard, like just scribbling away, or then it'd, like, back at our apartment, we'd literally just go lay by the pool and write. And I'm like, I'm not gonna take my computer down there. So.
Right.
Yeah. So then the second draft of it became just transcribing my notebook and then making all the changes and moving things and doing all those things. And that it was that point that I was like, I think I actually have a book here. I think there's something here. And realized I know what to do with it because I'm not a novelist and I don't have those connections. And I'm, you know, it's like, cool. You know, it's kind of like the idea of, it's very similar to after I finished House of Purgatory. It was like, cool. You made a movie. Now what?
Yeah,
I think we just kind of forget that there is another side of this, you realize.
You can't just sit there with your manuscript in your hand.
It's like gonna sell it on the corner like a lemonade stand.
Right, just throwing it at people.
Yeah.
For some reason, when you were talking about the process, you mentioned the notebook, and I just immediately imagined you, like, going and setting up a whole desk in the woods with, like, an old-timey typewriter, and just, like, I have to get into the spirit of this. I don't know why. The whole time you were talking, I had that image just burned in my head.
I wish. That would be...
It seems like it came pretty... But I don't want to say easily, but was it really something that, like, you know, just being where you were at and hearing these things that just was like flowing out of you? Like, did it take a lot of effort?
Organic.
Organic is a great word.
Yeah.
It sounds like it is that. Yeah.
Yeah. It was very organic. And I think that this, you know, the horror and the story, the kind of like the ghost elements of it came easily. Cause I think when you're hearing the scary plays and you're hearing about, you know, someone died there and this happened, and then you just go down in this basement, you're like, God, this is like the creepiest place I've ever been. Like, it really makes that part of it easy. And I think there was certain things, you know, character stuff that I had wanted to write, you know, you kind of this backlot of characters that at some point you'd like to put them into one of your stories you haven't used yet.
Yeah.
And this kind of guy, you know, versions of me, and like a lot of stuff had gone on in the past like couple years that was like I'd been looking forward to mining as far as like relationship stuff and, you know, having friends that have gone through certain things that you're like, that's a really interesting, I'm really sorry you're going through that, but hang on, let me take a note. How did that feel?
Let me adapt that into my own stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So like there's certain, like, I definitely have to make some calls before the book is published and make some apologies and
that's
just
funny.
Stealing from people. But I think, yeah, I think that, so that side of it came really easy too, because it was the first time I'd gotten to tell a story that was it's internal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've written the horror stuff. I love the horror stuff. I know how to do that, but to be able to take this person's anguish and this kind of like loneliness, I think was the big thing. And I think there's a lot of like, I think as horror fans, I think we all kind of know that loneliness. I think we've always been a bit of outsider mentality. Mm-hmm. And then being queer on top of that, it's like, sure. Okay, there's definitely that outsider mentality. And I think that loneliness is just something we've all felt times to different degrees, and it's hard to put that on screen, but easy to put that in a book.
Yeah, when you're able to get into, you know, your protagonist's head and really like be there with those thoughts, you know, it's a whole different experience. No, that makes sense. I feel like a book is the best way to really dive into different people's like neurosis, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah.
And I think too that like books just, it's been a long time since I've seen a movie that scared me. There's a lot of good horror movies, but I think, you know, I think actually I was just listening to one of your other podcasts and you made some comments about the fact that we need to stop judging a horror movie on whether or not it scares us.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think you're talking about, the new James Wan,
Malignant. Yeah.
You're like, sometimes you can just have fun. It's a horror movie that's fun. And I think that I've seen a lot of horror movies that are fun. But I do miss being scared. Like I miss that, like Blair Witch Project, Paranormal Activity, like Sinister scared the crap out of me.
Yes.
Sinister, but I can tell you, but books, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's an imagination thing or just you can pace it exactly what's right for you. And I think that a lot of times with horror movies, there are certain directors that they bang through the scares so quick, or they just, something jumps at the screen, you're supposed to be scared. But with a book, you can kind of like read it at a pace that you like, that you know is going to build up to that scare versus having it shoved upon you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, also, I use American Psycho as my main talking point for this little bit, but I think that there is something about when you're watching a horror movie, you're witnessing something horrific take place. When you're reading something, you are forced to make it in your head. Like you're forced to build it. It's more invasive. The American Psycho movie is great. But I would say that it is a preschool version of that book. Like, that book is intense, and it can make you, like, really sick to your stomach reading it. And I just feel like there's certain things where, you know, having your psyche be a part of the process of creating
that experience. You're forced to imagine these things?
Yes. Well,
and you're like, fuck, did I just put that in my own head?
Right.
Did
it's,
I
you know
just
what
make
I mean?
That imagery up?
Yes. Like the author is obviously giving you the story and details and stuff, but your brain is filling in the gaps and is building this world. And it is literally, it's an experience that is literally happening inside of you in a way that is just different than horror movies, which is funny because I've watched thousands of horror movies and I've only read a few horror stories and books. And it's something I'm trying to dive into a lot more. Yeah. It's most of what I read is like fantasy. But I need to do that more because it's an intense experience. And yeah, you just, it's a whole different medium for sure.
Yeah. So. But it's hard to get into, I think, a lot of times too. It's like, you know, reading a novel is it's a commitment.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like one time you could throw on a movie and be like, all right, cool. Worst case scenario, I've wasted 2 hours.
Sure.
But with a book, it's like, you know, how long do, if you're not hooked right away, like, how long do I give this? Like, really, like, people say, oh, you're not going to, like, episode one's kind of garbage, but you know, stick around to episode three, then you'll really like it. Okay. Well, with a book, it's like, stick around till chapter 16 and you'll start writing. Like, I don't want to read 15 chapters of garbage.
Yeah. I'm 700 pages in. When the fuck does something start happening? like Jesus Christ. Yeah.
That makes sense. I'm curious. I think it goes without saying Stephen King's going to be one of the answers to this, but can you talk about your writing inspirations? Also for screenwriting as well. I mean, I'm sure it's kind of all one and the same, but can you talk about some of the writers that you really, you know, are inspirations to you?
Well, I think we're very similar. I cannot tell you how excited I was when you had Tim Jacobus on.
Dude!
I heard the way that you were fanboying over him, Sean. I was like, in your voice, I could hear myself. You're just like, oh my god, yes! Like, Jeremy walks at midnight, yes! I was like walking the dog, like pumping my fist, like, yes, talk about that one. I love that one.
Tyler, I was so stressed out for weeks before we did that interview. So I loved it.
To provide some context, yeah, that's a very early episode. It's like episode 6. Yeah. Out of, you know, we've done this for over a year now, so over like 60 episodes. But yeah, that was one of our earliest episodes. Still getting the feel for this too.
Yeah.
And yeah, Sean was. I mean, obviously, I'm a fan of Goosebumps too, but Sean was just on another level.
Yeah, yeah. I just got like re-excited all over for it. but nice. Okay. Well, then I have to ask, like, what are some of your favorite Goosebumps books?
Scarecrow Walks at Midnight is like my number one. That one, both the art and like, scarecrows have just always just
freaked
me out. There's something about them. It's funny, it's like years ago, I actually wrote a children's book, and it was completely random, but Brian the Scarecrow, who's scared of everything. Again, it's like just this idea of like scarecrows.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look here. I don't have scarecrows here, but I do have the Headless Horseman.
Nice.
So that was a big one. I think The Mask obviously was one of those that was just like came out right at that right time, Halloween. Yeah. I don't know why, because it's been so long, but I remember being obsessed with Phantom the Auditorium.
Yes,
and I don't know what it was about that. There must have been something in there that really spoke to me, but I can't remember what it was. But I remember reading that one over and over again.
That's a good episode too. That's one of the ones where I remember the cover way more than I remember the story. I would need to reread it, but the cover is just so embedded in my head, like the big flowy cape and we could have a whole Goosebumps episode. All right, we're but okay,
so that was like early on, like that was kind of my first, you know, like a lot of us, that was like the starting to see those at the Scholastic Book Fair.
Yeah,
just being like, what is this? I need it in my face.
Yeah.
And then from there, you know, graduating again, kind of like the artwork of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Like, yep.
Yeah.
To me, was it Stephen Gamel?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
The scariest artwork to this day I've ever seen. And that was like a big part of when I, you know, as far as Dead Things Do, when I found Mark's artwork online, he has that aesthetic. He has that, like, absolutely. Just, it's the watercolor, it's the black and white, but it's also just that. He has it, you know, whatever that creepy, inky sort of flowing, it factor. And Mark, so I reached out to Mark, and he was gracious enough to do the cover for my book. Scary Stories in the Dark, I'll never forget those. And then slowly graduating up to, you know, there's Fear Street, which we all did. And then I remember my mom, my brother, I'm an older brother, and he would read Dean Koontz, and my mom wouldn't allow me to read them because she thought they were too scary. So of course that's the first thing you use, like Exorcist in, give me the Dean Koontz book off my brother's shelf. So I got really into Dean Koontz. I loved a lot of his early stuff, the, you know, the Watchers and Phantoms and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That was much more the supernatural type stuff. I think he does a lot more of the kind of like the husband and the good guy. He does thriller kind of stuff more now. But I loved his supernatural stuff. The Odd Thomas.
Yes.
So those were the big ones for me. And then, obviously getting into King, and once you read it, you're never the same.
Yeah.
Pet Cemetery, I think, destroyed me.
I have it on my shelf, and like I said, I haven't read a lot of horror. When it comes to Stephen King, I've read The Shining, and I've read a few stories from Nightmares and Dreamscapes. But even then, that was forever ago. But I have it, Carrie, and something else on my shelf over here. And it is such a daunting book. Like, it is very,
talk about a commitment. Yeah.
Right, I was about to say, but I need to do it. Like, it's an experience that I need to have, I'm excited to never be the same.
And as well as it works, like, as much as the miniseries and the movie, for everything they did well, everything they could do, there's just certain elements of King that just do not adapt well to screen. You know, it's kind of the same idea. It's like, something just work better as a book.
Yeah.
And that's one of those, like, once that gets into its second half and it's kind of more fantastical, you know, not sci-fi necessarily, but the cosmic horror elements.
Yes.
I think a lot of that works much better on the page than can be translated.
Right. Unless you wanted to do a 30-hour, like, mini, quote-unquote, mini-series, you know, going through every little thing. And even then, probably not the same.
No. Yeah. What I would give for a mini... And I think what there was... I know when they were... Obviously, when they were trying to get it made, there were 35 different versions of it and then different ways of getting it done. And I was so rooting for the mini-series, you know, the limited series.
Yeah.
I think if they did it now, I mean, what... Matt finally got greenlit, what, how many years? It was probably, like... 8 years ago, maybe. Mm-hmm. The landscape now being so different with streamers, I guarantee that that would now be a limited series, and I think would do it so much more justice.
Agreed.
Look what they did. Look what, give it to Flanagan. Can you imagine him doing it?
No,
that would be. I can't. Yeah, what would that even be like? That's another common talking point on the show that I push all the time, is that I think miniseries is the way to go with a lot of things, you know. You know, movie gives you only so much time. It's, I don't know, I would be excited to see a lot of things visited as a series. Sorry to interrupt you, Steve. We kind of started talking.
Well, no, I was just going to say they're doing, I don't know the full idea behind it, but I know Welcome to Derry is, you know, something that's coming to HBO soon. I'm sure they're in the pre-production or production process.
Mm-hmm.
But then you also have, I mean, Castle Rock is, I think it's phenomenal. I think it's, you know, a great tie-in of a lot of Stephen King things, and it's not like a pure adaptation, but I do think that they do something really cool, even though it got canceled after two seasons. But yeah, I agree. I think more and more, I think horror stories are told so well over episodics than they are in films.
Yeah.
Not that I don't absolutely love horror films, but... you just get something different. I think it's very true.
I think it's a total, like, it's just such a different thing, because it goes against what we say about seeing them in the theater is so important.
Yeah.
And these stories, it's just a totally different. And I think that's why people get so, trying to define what horror is just like an impossible question, because there's just so much, and there's so much, like, some of it's fun, some of it's not fun, some of it's like really nihilistic and hits like. Read, I mean, to King, like, King's The Mist story is like great, not uplifting by any means, but it's definitely like it ends in a way that you're like, okay, like there's a chance for humanity. And then you see what they did with the movie, and you're like, Jesus Christ, why do you hate
this? Yeah.
One of my favorite movies ends of all time.
Absolutely.
So I think there's just so different. And again, it just, that works well as a movie. And then you have the series The Mist, which you're like, again, it's like, I know it's like apples and oranges, but. Certain things, like, okay, you know, something like the horror of The Mist, I feel like doesn't quite translate when you're on the screen and you're cutting to commercial. That's the other thing. It's like, if you're on a network where you got to cut to commercial, it's going to ruin any sort of tension you built.
100%. Yeah, I tried to get into the show, not to shit on anyone's work, but I tried to get into the show when it came out, and I just couldn't. I think, I was looking for something different. But you're absolutely right. It's I think it's all about picking what medium to use for each project, what best serves that project. And and unfortunately, we live in a world where, you know, getting something out quick, getting a ton of stuff out, and prioritizing money is often a big thing. I wish that the project was always put, you know, at the top, but it's just not always the case. Speaking of projects, though, curious what your future plans are. You have. You know, the movie under you got a bunch of reality TV under you got the book. What can we expect next? Like, what's going on?
Got a couple different things that are kind of making their rounds. My reps are out now with a new pilot that's kind of exciting. Nice. Are you familiar at all with Missing 411? Have you heard of this?
No.
I think it's a documentary. It's essentially this kind of the national parks in the United States, all our national parks, all of these people have gone missing. There's like thousands of people that have gone missing, and there's no records of it. And there's these kind of bizarre coincidences and things that don't quite line up. So kind of, that was the jumping off point of a new kind of pilot series that I
love that. We have an episode. I don't remember what episode it is, but I was listening to our friends, you know, our friends at Morbid, and their podcast, and they were talking about rumors of feral people that live in the national parks, and it blew my absolute mind that that's even a concept. So you talking about national parks and people going missing is very interesting.
I'm not saying that. Oh, I was just going to say, I'm not saying that it's aliens, but it's aliens and skinwalkers. Maybe they're the same thing. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, if you're going to start getting into horror novels more, definitely put Only the Good Indians or The Only Good Indian.
Okay.
The Only Good Indian. Okay. The Only Good
Indian. Talk about like kind of that skinwalker sort of. That's just an incredible book. Okay.
Hell yeah.
I just wrote it down. Sorry. I got.
Yeah. No, it's all good. Yeah. I think, yeah. So, and check out that Missing 411. I think it's like, it might just be on like YouTube. But it's like this crazy, just kind of like the coincidences that don't make sense. The fact that national parks, if you like even reach out to the Department of Interior, there is no record. They do not keep a record, which seems like, why would you not keep a record of the people that are going missing in parks? That
seems bizarre. Because they got deals with the aliens. Don't even get me started, dude. Right, go get your tinfoil hat. Go get your tinfoil hat.
Yeah.
We're going to sit for another 3 hours. Yeah.
We got Goosebumps and we got alien conspiracies.
Yep.
Absolutely. Tyler, we really appreciate you being on the show. Before we let you go, you just gave us a good rec with the Only Good Indian. And normally we ask for what we call mostly horror recommendations. Are there a couple of horror things, maybe a non-horror thing that you think the listeners should be checking out?
I don't know if people are familiar with these. I found them. I don't know if everyone knows about them, but if you are a fan of A24 films, Hereditary is like one of my just perfect movies.
Absolutely.
They released these script books.
Yes.
I don't know if you're familiar with them, but they're the hard bound. It's the, you know, the script and then just kind of like photography, and there's like an essay type stuff in it. And just like, they are the most incredible, like hard bound, like beautiful, like on your shelf books. I got Hereditary, and I also have The Witch.
Hell yeah.
Yes. I have The Witch too. It's like one of my favorite possessions. Yeah.
Oh, it's so absolutely good. And I think too, it's like, it's not, I think a lot of times when you find scripts online, because as a writer, just constantly be reading other, you know, reading your favorite movies, and this, a lot of times the screenplays you find are the almost like a transcription of the movie, where it's not necessarily what they wrote. It's, oh, let's go back, and this version of Hereditary, it's not necessarily the shooting script. So it's like there are scenes that got deleted at some point, there's alternate stuff. And somehow it's 140 pages. I have no idea how he got greenlit at 140 page script.
Well, his next movie is going to be like 4 hours long, so we'll have to prep for that one too.
Yeah. I highly recommend those. I think they sell them on like the A24 website, but as you guys know,
absolutely,
those are awesome. I love that so much. It's like a gift to myself. And gosh, a non-horror one. This is the one that I've been like beating my head against the wall. I really like. For writers, especially screenwriters, there's this incredible, you know, not to plug another podcast on your podcast, but it'd be different enough. There's a screenplay podcast called Screaming Into the Hollywood Abyss that I love. Again, it's really great for screenwriters. It's all about failure. And like, that's what, there's so many of these things. They're like, how did you, let's just like sit around and talk about how great we are, how we're all masters of the universe and all the great projects we have going on. And these guys have a lot, all their guests on are kind of like, tell us about how hard it was and how bad it sucked and how like your heartbreak, which I love. And I think like as a screenwriter coming, it's like as a writer of any sort, it's like it's rejection all day, every day. And it's very easy to feel like you're the only one getting rejected when you're like looking at, you know, you go on Twitter or whatever, and you're seeing all these people having these, oh, I sold this and I got this and I have a book coming out and I'm this and I'm the greatest. And you don't realize it underneath, like, but for every one of those, there's 200 heartbreaks that we don't tweet about. We don't talk about how, oh my God, I'm this close to killing myself today. So I think like hearing these people that are incredibly successful, like go back and talk about how broken they were about a project falling apart or how hard it was to get something made. I love that. That's a great, it's a fun, like, just, you're not alone. It sucks for everybody.
Honestly, I'm really glad you recommended that, because I think I'm gonna jump right into it. I could use a healthy dose of other people's pain for a second.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and there's lessons to learn in it, and it's like, yeah, it's a fun one. I definitely
sure
so happy I found that one.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, yeah, man, like I said, thank you. You were going to say something, Sean?
Well, I was going to say, what, do, like, let people know where they can check you out. Where can we, can we follow you? Where can we, you know, get the book? Where, hook the people up.
I am on Twitter, even though I try to avoid it because all that is just me procrastinating. TJC8085. I don't know why that is my tag. It's one of the things you made when you were, like, you know, 20 years old. It had meaning back then. I don't remember what that meaning was. And then the book is going to be on Amazon, or it's on, pre-orders are available on Amazon, or by the time this comes out, probably available, As Dead Things Do. And yeah, that's kind of, that's it. I would tell you my Instagram, but I don't even remember it. To tell the truth.
That's fine. Just search Tyler Christensen. We'll tag it.
Try to avoid social media as much as possible. Was like another, such a pain. I'm sure you guys go through this too, where it's like, you need it to build this brand and to get, unfortunately, there's no other way to get the word out and to build a viewership or like a listenership. But it's such a slog. And it's, I have so much else to do. I don't want to come up with 35 hashtags and what's trending now and how do I get into that.
The social media management is a whole other double full-time job. It is two full-time jobs. Or it's a full-time job for every social media that you're on next to all the other things that you're doing. So I get it. It's exhausting.
It is. Another thing, too, it's like such like, as for me, it's like, I think maybe it's like the Midwest and us. Like, I'm not, I don't like talking about myself. I don't like putting myself in like, look at how great I am. You should think I'm great, too. It's just not who I am at all. So it's very hard to be like, hey, everyone, come see me and come read my stuff. I'm like, you know, they'll find it. like the worst when it comes to marketing ever. Yeah. It's like,
do I have to plug myself?
Exactly.
That's fair. Well, listen, Tyler, we'll plug your stuff for you. Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much for being on the show this week. And if you're listening, check out As Dead Things Do. It will be available on Amazon by the time that this episode comes out. Or pre-order it if you're listening to this early on Wondery or Amazon Music. Tyler, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, awesome. You bet. Thank you guys so much. It's been so much fun.
Absolutely.
Take care.
If you like Mostly Horror, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcast.
Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.